A haunted house is a house with ghosts in it. The spirits of people who've died. But the spirits living in a house possessed have never existed in human form. They've only existed in spirit form. They're pure evil. They're demons.
The following podcast is a Carolina Boys production. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Crime and Entertainment. I'm your host, Hollywood Wade. Now today, if you recognize that intro there, that was from a little horror movie in the late 80s called Night of the Demons. One of my personal favorite horror movies of all time. I was beside myself with the excitement because I got to have the lead character, Amelia Kincaid, who played Angela in Night of the Demons 1, 2, and 3. She was not involved in the remake that happened in the mid-2000s. That's probably a good thing. It wasn't very well-received and up to snuff as far as the other ones. 1 is just head and shoulders above the rest. 2 was pretty good. 3 was okay. 1 was just going to be very hard to beat. Just a very much of a throwback, old school horror. The budget was real slim. A lot of the, you know, prosthetics and stuff were great. And, you know, on those slim budget movies, when they do what they have to make it work, sometimes you just get gold. And that's what this movie is. It was gold. It's definitely in my top 10 of horror films of all time. And so I was extremely happy to get Angela on the show. And let's not beat around the bush, folks. Let's get right into it here with Amelia Kincaid on Crime and Entertainment. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Crime and Entertainment. I have here a very special guest, and I've got to just do a little bow down here. Please welcome Amelia Kincaid, star of Night of the Demons 1, 2, and 3. Amelia, how are you?
Wow. Well, to have a big man like you bowing down to me, now isn't that something?
It sure is. And I tell you, we spoke a little off air when I started this podcast 2 years ago. I'm a huge horror movie fan, and I knew there was you and a handful of others that I said, if I don't do anybody else, if I never get an interview, if I just have to get on and ramble, I need to interview you to dive into your career and your experience in this movie, because this movie, I don't think was meant to be as big as it has become. It wasn't like a Freddy franchise or anything like that, but it has just struck a chord with audiences, and it keeps striking that chord. It keeps staying alive. It keeps getting, you know, documentaries and stuff about it. You guys have kind of, we'll get into it, reunited as of late and started to do some of these cons as a group. And I mean, it's insane how this movie, for no particular reason other than the fact that I think you could just tell that there was a great chemistry between you guys on film, It lasts forever. I mean, and I don't see it slowing down anytime soon.
It is so shocking to me. It's so incredible. It's so flattering. So I get to ask you this, mm-hmm. because I know for a fact there's no way to plan the success, much less the longevity of any movie, no matter how many millions of dollars they're going to put into one of these huge hopeful, you know, blockbuster movies at one of the major studios. They don't know if it's going to bomb or not. They don't know if they're going to make money or not. Mm-hmm. And we were getting paid less than daily wage, less than affirmative action. And maybe that's why. I mean, I can only assume that one of the things the audience feels that's keeping this alive generation after generation is the excitement. The electricity of it was that we were all young and having fun. And I'm not just the actors, every single member mm-hmm. of the cast of players that created that movie, some of them that I feel are more important than the actors. Because yep. our cinematographer, our set designer, God knows our special effects guys, the directors, the composer, the Asian dude who did my demon voice. I mean, every single person was not getting paid enough to go out and buy yourself a nice popsicle. And we thought, well, you know, no one's ever going to see this. 3 weeks from now, they're going to sweep it under the rug. So who cares? We'll just go crazy.
Right.
But what is it? What was it to you that made this and continues to make this something that has made an impact on your life?
I think to me, it was very relatable. Everybody had a character in that movie that you were related to, whether you were a ladies' man like Jay, or whether you were just kind of that cool guy like Sal, or whether you were the loud and boisterous one like Stooge, you know, whether you were like yourself or Linnea Quigley or Judy or, you know, all, I mean, everybody had somebody that I'm sure had someone in their own clique that could relate it to. And it seemed like it was a party that I would go to. Like if I was a kid, we would find, oh, that house is supposed to be haunted. Well, let's ditch the dance and go there. All of it seemed like something that could really happen. And I think the key is, one of the key things is the makeup and stuff when you guys turned into demons. Like, I'll be honest with you. I don't know if I've ever seen a demon movie that I thought worked well other than Night of the Demons. Like, maybe Exorcist. Exorcist was okay. But, like, y'all's demon possession was just, it was perfect. It was unlike anything I'd ever seen at the time anyway. And even since then, I've seen a lot of copies from y'all, in my opinion, this ripped off the way y'all did it. But I mean, everything, just the voices and, you know, the way you were just floating through the hallway. I mean, it was just, it seemed perfect. It wasn't too far over the top to where it was unbelievable, but it was right on that line. And it just was like, all this could like really happen if this was, I mean, even the so much as the seance of letting that demon loose, which is, you know, everybody knows with witchcraft, you know, who knows? All of it made sense. It wasn't anything that was like, wow, this is too far-fetched for me to watch. And I think that's what happens with a lot of horror films today. It's a little bit unbelievable to get them to where they're at in the movie. And that kind of automatically puts you in a bad spot. But you guys go there because of a party. You know, then you bring out the seance, then the demon gets released, and it flows so well, and all you guys work well together. You can tell you guys probably had a blast making that movie.
We did. And the one person I'm not giving credit to that I probably should be giving credit to is the writer.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I read it, those things might not have been registering in my mind that every single one of these characters is someone that you went to high school with.
Yeah.
And Joe Augustin knew how to make that chemistry work. And what is astonishing for me is that I was playing the outcast, and he has me and Linnea terrorizing, if not murdering, but torturing the kids in high school that you would like to kill.
Yeah.
You want to see him dead. You want to see him die. And that wasn't occurring to me at all when I first read the script. And for me, because you mentioned the seance, Linnea actually got possessed before I did.
Right. Yeah, she was the first one.
And Angela, even though I end up getting the honor and the glory of playing the villain, of getting credit as this villainess, I was the voice of reason in the party. Yep. I was the one saying, we shouldn't be doing this. This house is not haunted. This house is possessed.
Yep.
And I'm cautioning them against it. And they're all pushing, and they want it to happen. So when I bring it on, they all get picked off. And I guess there's one character that everyone would like to see die. And honestly, the ones that lived in the end, it is a good wins out over evil kind of story. Because the ones that live in the end, Kathy Podwell's character, Judy,
mm-hmm.
She's the personification of goodness. And Alvin Alexis, who I'm about to get to do lots of cons with this summer, he and Hal Haven, Stooge, who's got this massive cult following now too. He was the Alvin's character. Roger was the first Black man to live in a horror movie.
Yeah.
And now I've seen at these conventions, they're girls coming as him in the so I mean they're gender bending. They're coming as him in his pirate outfit. And the fact that this movie is still around, even much less that it's taking on new life with every new generation. People come through my lines now. It was a big deal the first time I saw an Angela attack on someone. Now it might be every other fan, maybe every third fan. Maybe they're going to come in. Their dogs are dressed as me. Their babies are dressed as me. Their children are dressed as me. Some of the family will come through. The whole family has on demons t-shirts. And the fact that this still has some sort of magical quality. And it is in people's hearts to this extent. It just completely and totally blows my mind.
Well, and I think too, like your character, obviously when you turn and you become demonic, that's what everybody really associates with, because it's something that like kids today don't get to experience. When I walked into a video store when I was young, we didn't have trailers. We couldn't pull up trailers and stuff to movies on our phones. So, you know, those things weren't around. So you had to look at box art and then flip it and look at the back and read a little synopsis of the film. But at least the one that I seen had you in like full makeup, you know, with the invitation to the party. I think it was like, you know, Angela's having a hell of a party. Make sure you're invited or something along those lines. But that grabbed you. That was like, holy shit, let me look at this. And then you flip it and you kind of read and it's like, all right, kids go to party, demon gets possessed, kills everybody. I'm down. I'm gonna rent this. Those are things that today's society doesn't get to have. You know, they don't have that experience. Everything's online. Everything's on demand. And I know there's ways you can watch trailers and stuff like that now, but there was just something about going into the movie store and seeing that sitting on the shelf and your picture literally jumping off the VHS. And it's just like, man, you know, this looks like it's going to be scary. And then for the first portion of the film, you know, you're normal, you're unpossessed. But then when, like you said, once Linnea's character gets it, then I think she kisses you, gives it to you. And then there's all hell breaks loose after that.
Oh, I don't mean to be this blurry. I'm still just figuring out the Zoom filters. I haven't mastered this yet. So sorry about that.
No, but you're fine. You're fine.
You can hear me.
And one thing too, your dance scene, and I wanted to jump a little bit before we got into Night of the Demons, the dance scene that you've done is obviously one of the more iconic parts of that movie. You got cast. You were actually a dancer in the Stray Cat Sexy 17 video.
That's right.
And that's did that guy see you and he picked you for this film because of that?
Once again, it was the writer. Joe Augustine saw that video. And I was the only girl in that Stray Cat video. I mean, I was the one with the band.
Yeah.
So there were some backup dancers and extras, but Joe Augustine saw it and he wanted a dancer for the role. And to go back to what you just said, the actual movie poster said, Angela's having a party. Jason and Freddie are too scared to come.
That's right.
Those two films had just come out. And so part of it, and I don't know, because I want to hear from the fans whenever I meet them, I want to hear this. But it may be because I was the first female monster.
Mm-hmm.
And so was Linnea Quigley, you know, not to discount her amazing performance. She's terrifying.
Right.
She's terrifying. But between the two of us, I would say there's the blonde and the brunette that you might have had a crush on in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's because high school boys, you tell me if this is true or not, we're going through all of this guilt and trauma and drama about their sexuality. And this is every little boy's worst nightmare. Maybe mommy's going to come in and catch you masturbating. And then what happens? Then Angela comes to get you because I was a girl you were thinking about or something like this. And same thing with Linnea's character, because there were already male monsters and demons, and there always have been. Mm-hmm. But there was something about the fact that we're female that made it scarier for men.
Yeah, 100%. And like you said, that hadn't really been done at that point in time. Not just one, let alone you had two.
Yeah, two. And it set a precedent. And with the dance, if I had just gone, here, pretend to be scary, it wouldn't have been scary.
Right.
The reason it was scary was that I wasn't trying to be scary. And I'd been trained as a ballerina. So having it, because I thought, well, how what is the absolute most terrifying thing that I could ever do here? And it would be to be graceful and slinky, like, gathering you in and not paying any attention at all to the guy watching me. Like, I could care less about him. And I'm amazed. When I first started in Hollywood, I had no intention of being an actor. Zero. I didn't want to be an actor. And I was living, I came out and I spent the summer with my aunt, Rue McClanahan of Golden Girls fame.
Blanche, yeah.
She was the one who said, Mimi, you're going to be an actress. And I said, Rue, I don't want to be an actress. I'm a dancer. I only want to be a dancer. You are not going to be a chorus girl. You're going to be an actress. And I'll tell you what, if I hadn't been staying with Rue, I might not have taken that role. Because Rue said, it's a lead role. You're taking it. You're doing it. And she even came down to the set at one point and backed me up. But she saw the potential power in this role.
Well, she was spot on. And I didn't even actually realize that until I started researching a little bit more about you. I had no idea that was your aunt. And you kind of had a little hand in the way she played her role in Golden Girls. Didn't you kind of give her a little nod of how she should do her character?
I sure did. And that was one night. I've told this story before, but it's worth retelling if nobody's heard this story, that she came home. And this was the same summer that I had just gotten the Stray Cat video, and I started getting jobs as a dancer. And she got the job on the Golden Girls. And she came home crying. She had just gotten the job. And she said, Mamie, I don't know what to do. Betty White's the dumb blonde, and they're trying to make me a dumb blonde too. And it just doesn't work. Well, Betty White was the best dumb blonde that ever lived.
Oh, yeah.
You don't top that. You don't mess with that. Betty's the dumb blonde. You don't mess with that. And she was too good at it. She'd been doing it for decades, expertly. And finally, in the middle of the night, and we're sitting there drinking cheap champagne, I'm sitting on the kitchen floor. And I was 19 years old. I said, Rue, I just got tired of her whining. I said, give me the damn script. And I started reading it, and I said, I want you to read these lines like your panties are on fire. They're on fire. And she took the script, and every line that wasn't funny before, it wouldn't have been funny. I mean, if you're going to say, is that the postman? I'll get it. It's not funny. But if you say, is that the postman? I'll get it. Then she turned everything around and she made herself into the sex bomb character.
Right. Yeah.
She said that the director doubled over laughing. The cameraman dropped the camera. He was laughing so hard he was crying. She went on to win an Emmy, and when she sobered up the next day, she totally forgot that I created that character. But she did not create my character. Angela was something that came out of me.
Yeah.
But it was a group effort, as I'm saying. You know, I didn't glue that stuff on my face. Steve Johnson did. I didn't have that brilliant editing that made things scary that wouldn't have been scary any other way.
Right.
The editor did that. The cinematographer is running through those green, sickening walls in the hallways, and all you hear is this demon voice. I mean, I think that's the scariest thing in the movie. It's not what you see. It's what you don't see.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%.
It's what you don't see. No. And that's what all great movie makers say about suspense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and your mind can be the your mind can play the things that, you know, sometimes maybe you don't have the budget. There's tricks to it. You know, if you don't have the budget to pull off something, you don't necessarily have to show it being done. But as long as your mind knows what's being done, you know, it can play it. Sometimes your mind is the better theater.
And I think it was a combination of both of those things. There are a lot of things on television now. If I'm sitting having dinner and I'm flipping through channels, I don't want to happen upon open heart surgery. Or, you know, all of a sudden they show the character who's been hit by a car, or even if they show the character getting a hand chopped off or something in a mafia movie, it's not scary. What's scary is what you don't see. Mm-hmm. And then when they do show the actors, it better be freaking terrifying and maybe not so up close. I mean, I think now they're trying too hard.
Yeah.
They're pushing too hard. And it doesn't work anymore. The other thing that I think may have been the reason that these movies are iconic and still around was that we were the first to do it.
You were 100%. And that's,
I mean, on this scale, at least, maybe there were other ones before me, but not at this, not like this, not this scale.
Yeah.
And now once you see it, and every single thing you see is all CGI. It's all been done before. It's not scary. It's hard to find anything that isn't a ripoff of Steve Johnson's makeup.
Yeah. If horror fans today are so desperate for that horror movie or horror franchise, I think Insidious is about the only one that I would say is kind of holding water. I've enjoyed the Insidious films, but other than that, like, I've been dying to get a good scary movie. Now, I will say that I took my son recently and we seen the newest Evil Dead movie. I was really pleased with that one. I did not like the remake they did a couple of years back, but this is a sequel because it still follows a storyline, but it's the one that just come out about a month ago. And I was pretty pleased with that one, but I'm a hard critic of horror because I grew up in the golden age of horror, which was, you know, you guys, that late 80s, mid 90s, that was the golden age of horror, man, at least for my money anyway.
Apparently it was. And what's so ironic about it, Wade, is that people ask me why I quit acting. I mean, you don't wake up in the morning and say, oh, I think I'll quit being a movie star today.
Right.
That doesn't happen. Nobody would hire me. I was completely and totally blacklisted because they thought, well, she can't do anything but horror. The only video she has on herself is in possession makeup. And we can't cast her in anything else. Well, who would ever dream that now almost every single show that you turn on Netflix or Hulu or Amazon Prime, all of them, they're all either zombie movies or, you know, they're vampire movies. They're all horror. Mm-hmm. And that's all that is out there. I mean, even the ones that I love the most, like the X-Men, I like a lot of the Marvel movies. A lot of that stuff is horror.
Yeah.
Technically, you know, because you've got characters that they have supernatural powers and they're incredibly scary. Mm-hmm. But back then, it was so taboo. It was so not done. And so there was still a lot of shock value to it. And there was also shock value to the sexuality, like Freddy in the coffin when mm-hmm. Phil Tanzini gets his arm chopped off, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. That's really scary.
Yeah. And it still had those elements of, you know, if you go off to have sex, you know, somewhere in a place like that, you're probably going to die, you know, because they die. Then Jay dies when he's trying to have sex with, he's trying to have it with Judy, but then he goes with Lene. I forgot Judy's actual name, but it still lends that you've almost got a subliminal message in here. All right. You know, this might not be a Jason or a Freddy, but still sex will get you killed. And it keeps up with those horror tones that are resonated with any hormonal raging teenager at the time, you know?
Well, he also was two timing. So that's what I mean about the good wins out over evil themes. Mm-hmm. And everyone who, I mean, even when I bit out Stooge's tongue, well, he had it coming.
Yeah.
He had it coming. He deserved it. Who wouldn't want it? Who wouldn't want to cut his tongue out? So, and so there were all these kind of moral themes to it. And Judy actually did win out in the end over me, but I'm a eternal demon. So I come back to life every Halloween, or at least two more movies I did.
Yeah. That scene, you know, we talked about your dancing, which the dance scene was phenomenal. I heard you part of your agreement to do it was you got to choreograph that whole thing by yourself, which the dance was phenomenal. But I think what went along with it was that song. I mean, it was like, did you know that song? Did they give you a copy of it?
Yeah. Yeah. My best friend at the time was a punk rocker. Okay. And she said, you have to use the song. It has to be the song. But that's impossible. I mean, the band doesn't own any of their songs. No band owns their songs. Not if it's been produced by a major studio. So either Sony or, one of the big companies is going to own the music. And this was pre-email. I wrote a handwritten letter to Peter Murphy begging, saying, it has to be this song. This is why we have to use it. And he went to the company and he got the rights to that song. I mean, that's just not done. That is pure magic. Nobody does that. You're not going to be able to say, I need this huge, huge famous hit for my little low budget horror movie. And not only that, I need it for free.
Yeah.
That's what we did. And I got it. But that was more of that sort of beginner's luck and that excitement and not knowing any better. People always ask me, oh, you know, what's your favorite horror movie, or were you already in the genre? And honestly, the only thing I had seen that had really, really influenced me was An American Werewolf in London, because when he turns into a wolf, no one had ever seen that before. When he turns into that werewolf, now it's run in the mill. You turn it on, you're going to see something like that probably 10 times on TV. Mm-hmm. No one had ever done anything like that before. And I was just mesmerized. I was like, wow, what is he doing? And because I hadn't seen a bunch of other horror movies, I wasn't influenced on how do I act scary? What's it supposed to be? There was no direction on our possessions. If somebody said to you, okay, Wade, you're possessed. Roll camera. it's on you. You've got to come up with something that doesn't look cheesy and that is actually terrifying. And I think that every single one, not just the first movie, but all three movies, the cast of characters, the actors were spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
Each one of them came up with a unique twist on what it is to be possessed.
Yep. And another thing too, like when you first bit Stooge's tongue off, like, I don't think you had went full demon at that point. You had his blood and everything around your mouth. But something that I paid attention to, the earrings that you were wearing at that point, they had gotten flipped upside down, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of people wouldn't pick up on that, but anyway, upside down crosses usually are symbolism of evil or, you know, some sort of demonic presence. Cause in the beginning they were just regular crosses. But after you'd done that, they had flipped upside down. And I remember, you know, it was that song. It was just right when you went up to kiss him. And I remember that line. It's like, inside each man, there's a sinner. And then it just, that music and the flashing lights. And you could just tell, I was like, oh shit. And then after that, it just, I mean, it's just off the rails. What were you guys using, especially you, because Stooge and them would run, but you just looked like you were floating through every scene. Like when you were chasing them, like what was the trick to that?
Well, in the hallway, I was on roller skates.
Okay. Yeah, because it looked great.
I was trying not to wipe out because I had on a hoop skirt with all these crinolines, tutu under it. And if my wheels had gotten caught in that, I would have fallen flat on my face.
Oh, yeah.
So that scene was movie magic. There's another scene where there's smoke coming out of my dress, out of my wrists, and there's just smoke starting to billow. This is how low budget it was. Steve Johnson's off camera, smoking cigarettes and blowing the smoke into tubes. And the tubes are through my dress. Part two in the snake scene, which is my favorite scene, the 27 and a half hours I spent glued to that teeter-totter, strapped in with two contacts in each eye, with fangs that made my mouth bleed. And, you know, I'm unrecognizable. They've been tinkering with my makeup and paint in my face and gluing stuff on me for over 9 hours. Well, even in part one, when we had the burn makeup and Stooge is burned, that was at least 9 hours. Because once they put the makeup on, then they hot slimed us with that red slime. But it was in that snake scene. He's standing off stage with a dental floss tied to my tail, and he's whipping it around. And you see how effective that was. You don't see the dental floss. It's terrifying.
Wow. That's crazy how they were able to do stuff so simple, but so effective. It's just, there's something to be said about movie making back then. And like I said, I think maybe it's just the authenticity to it that you don't have nowadays, because now half the shit you guys done in that movie would be done CGI, and the effect would not be near as strong.
Well, it's beginning to come back, and there's now a new renaissance of low budget filmmakers and low budget filmmakers in all genres that are saying, okay, now wait a minute. This is what it was supposed to be. Mm-hmm. It was supposed to be you in the backyard with a camera, and you're in junior high and you're making your first movie. And there's this incredible sense of joy and excitement to it. And it's not stale or stilted the way some of these huge budget movies. I've never made one of those movies, but they're not fun to watch.
Right. No, I agree. And
the actors are scared to death that they have to do everything right or they're going to lose a job. I'm sure the directors are so tight they squeak, because if they don't do everything right, the studio's going to fire them. And they do all sorts of stupid things, like, you know, send it out to get an audience approval on what the ending is. And then if the audience doesn't like it, they change it. And this, all that second guessing of what your audience is going to think, we didn't have that. I think we may have been at the very beginning of getting the audience reaction at the end to see if it needs to be rewritten. But it was fun, creative filmmaking.
Yeah.
When I watch these huge budget movies that are not fun to watch and that are all CGI, they're stale.
Mm-hmm. Well, even the ending of Night of the Demons, it left you kind of questioning, like, you know, is she a demon? You know, the woman that gave the husband the pie with the razor blades in it because he was planning on giving it to the kids. It even kind of left you questioning, like, well, wow, is she a demon now? Is there going to be a part two? You know, it left you with those question marks.
That very cleverly so.
Yeah, 100%. And another thing, too, when you talked about part two, and obviously, like you said, there's a huge sequence in there where you're on that snake. There was a girl that was in there, Christine Taylor.
Yeah.
I had grown up, you know, watching Nickelodeon like any other kid in my era. And she was in a show that used to come on called Hey Dude, where she was in like a ranch. It was like two or three kids hanging around on a ranch. It was like their one of Nickelodeon's episodic televisions for teenagers. And that was like where I knew her. I don't know if the Brady movie had been done by that, the actual like Brady Bunch movie, because I know she was in that too. But that was like where I knew her from. And then she's in Night of the Demons 2, which I was stoked to come out because I knew you were in it. And I was just like, wow, it's like now I'm seeing people that I was used to seeing in those teenager roles. Now they're in the horror movies. And you had everything else with that, too. You had the nun, you had the priest, you had the guy that was, I forgot his name, but he was like figuring all of it out. The one that had the book on demonology and all that. Then, of course, you had the bad girls, you know, that was taking everybody there. And then Z-Boy. And I mean, it was another good movie of a lot of good host and cast of characters that fit very well into the whole story.
Well, the second one was directed by Brian Trenchard-Smith, whom I adore. Mm-hmm. I just flat out adore him. And he had some of the first movies I ever saw. When I was getting ready for part one, I watched Kevin Tenney's Witchboard. And I thought that was beautifully done. Stylish, beautifully done. And then with Brian Trenchard-Smith, he had just directed one of the sequels to one of the Leprechauns. And I didn't realize how fun they were to watch until I saw that. It's really funny. And he can make a silk purse out of a pig's ear. He just can. And he makes these stylish, amazing looking, gorgeous horror movies. I hope he makes a lot more of them.
Which Leprechaun did he do? You remember?
Oh, I should know. And I'm not remembering it right now. It might have been second or third. And I'm sorry if he's watching. Sorry, Brian. Well, you should do a quick Google so we can see.
Let's see. Leprechaun 2.
That gave me a better idea of how funny things should be. Because the only other prototype that I based my character on was Tim Curry in Rocky Horror.
Right.
He was this kind of androgynous.
He done three.
Goth. Oh, three.
Yep. And I think I'm pretty sure that's the one where they were in Vegas and the guy that found the Lucky Charm and he was on the winning streak and all that. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Caroline Williams was in that too from Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
I'm about to be with her. So really? She is coming to Mesa, Arizona, the third week of August. Wow. And it's the first time I've done the Gathering of the Ghouls. And Linnea Quigley couldn't make it. And so it's Caroline Williams and I are the two headliners.
Wow. I mean, that's some horror icons right there, buddy, with you two headlining that thing.
Well, you should come.
Where is it at? Mesa, Arizona?
Mesa, Arizona. So this coming, not a week from this weekend, by the time this rolls out, let me see what the dates are. It's the 7th of July, that weekend, right after the 4th of July. I'll be in Albuquerque. Okay. And a lot of the other Demons cast members are coming. So Linnea Quigley's going to be there. Then the next one for me is the third weekend of August, and that's Mesa, Arizona. That one almost completely revolves around me. It blows my mind. The guys own a collectible store. He got me on, however, Facebook or got me online somehow. And he said, I've had a tattoo of you on my body for decades. And almost everybody who walks in the front door of the shop has a tattoo of you. I said, what are you kidding? Are you kidding me? And they're chicks too. And I said, he said, will you come? I said, will I come? You got to be freaking kidding me. I wouldn't miss this for the world. And then in September, we've got the first time cult classic, which has been down. So his store, Roy's store, is based on the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Mm-hmm. And he owns those cabins down in the country. I've been down there in southern Texas. So he's going to do the cult classic in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And then 2 weeks after that, I'm in Orlando, Florida for Phantasm. Again, lots of Demons cast members. This is our 35th anniversary year.
Wow. Now, which one is that in Orlando, Florida? Because that's pretty close to me.
I'd love for you to come down, baby. I would love for you to come down.
What date is that?
It is... It's the 17th. Oh, I'm going to have to check my schedule. Let me take a quick look at my.
Is that in July or August?
No, that was in September.
Oh, September.
All right, let me see. Let me get it right.
That's the 16th is on a Saturday. The 17th is on a Sunday.
So Cult Classic is the 2nd and 3rd of September. Phantasm is the 15th.
Okay. That's on a Friday.
If you come down to Florida, I'm going to have two comps waiting at the front door for you.
Well, thank you very much. I will definitely do it. I'm off on Friday. September's my birthday month. That could be my gift to myself.
Well, I could serve up the devil's food cake.
It's devil's food. I remember that line.
Things could go very, very bad from there. It would be much worse than a birthday spanking.
One question to hop back to part one really quick. Like, that house is just as much as a character as you guys, because it just looks scary as hell. Was that house like that? Did you guys have to do a lot? The reports I've read, the house was pretty much as is. You really didn't have to deck it up a whole lot.
Well, they came in and they did the set design with fake cobwebs. And I mean, they made it look a lot scarier. But the truth of the matter is that those homes were the mansions that were in old Hollywood back in the day when people like Charlie Chaplin had studios down there.
Right.
And now it's a completely gang-ridden ghetto part of L.A. And the boys have hilarious stories to tell of doing things they can't do anymore because now it's illegal, but they would go out in their makeup. And you cannot do that now. Because if you drive through a drive-thru and you're spewing blood in demon makeup, that somebody could drop dead, have a heart attack, and you'd have lawsuits. So you're not allowed to do it anymore. But boy, did they play some tricks on these guys. Because we were shooting all night. And unfortunately, what should have been saved as a national monument, a historic monument, even before the demons movies were made there, just on the virtue of the beauty of this mansion alone, it should have been kept. And now it's a Ralph's a grocery store.
Wow.
Probably a very haunted one. So I would be very careful if I were shopping there. I mean, maybe the vegetables fly up in the air and hit you in the face. I don't know. I wouldn't go to the bathroom in that place.
How were they able to shoot there? Did they rent it or buy it or just break in and start shooting? What was the process there to get that?
Oh, no, it was the normal traditional route. So they have, whenever you're going to use an established property, you've got to pay and there's legal things and they have to sign, you know, contracts and whatnot. But Hull House was very scary. It was a creepy place. And there were some lovely people. I've read the history of it. And there were lovely people living there. And it was a Victorian mansion. But it was haunted on its own. And the house was pretty scary because we had our makeup rooms were right there in the haunted house. And we're filming all night. And trust me, it's scary enough to look in the mirror and and not see yourself looking back at you.
Right. Yeah. I can imagine.
See that looking back at you and you don't recognize yourself because the makeup is so outrageous. It's creepy. And then you look over and then there's Linnea possessed and then there's Hal.
He's so damn scary when he gets possessed, man. It's insane. Like, and he's just one of those guys, like, you want him on your side. You want him to stay unturned. But he was, what, like the third one to go, I think.
Yeah, he's great. He's great. And the wonderful thing about these movies, we lost touch for decades. And only when I started getting invited to do these cons, and it was a fan who came through my line and said, I go as you every Halloween in the Hollywood Gay Parade. And the fan went from being a fan to one of my best friends to being one of my online assistants. People see him all the time. He does a lot of my social media. He let me pose in his dress and we were just goofing off. We were laughing our butts off. I put on a drag queen's dress and he started snapping pictures of me on his phone. And he put them all over Facebook and Instagram. We didn't think anything of it. I wasn't trying to get a job out of it. There was no, you know, there was no end result planned. Right. And the convention saw the pictures and wanted me in costume. And I went, oh, my God, you got to be kidding me after all these years. And then I talked Linnea into it. She didn't want to do it. She said, I can't do it. People are going to make fun of me. Well, far from that. They do not make fun of her. And then we got a lot of the other cast members coming to these conventions. And it reunited us. And now we're all closer than ever. And coming back after all these years, we found out that we have a lot of things in common.
That's awesome.
Linnea and I both are in the world of animals and rescuing animals. And so is Jill Terashita. And we just adore each other. And that's not normal. You can make movies and TV shows with people, and they'll give you attitude backstage, and you're never going to make a friend.
Right.
And maybe that's also part of what translates to the audience, is that we sincerely like each other.
Mm-hmm.
We're having fun.
And there's so many lines in there, too, that are just like, I still quote lines from that movie today, like especially Stooge when everybody's sitting around. And I think he said he stole it from John Belushi from a Saturday Night Live or something. It couldn't have been Saturday Night Live, or unless he didn't say that on air. But his whole eat a bowl of fuck line, like,
yeah,
that line just cracks me up every time I hear it. And people's like, where the hell do you get that from? And I'm like, bro, you never seen Night of the Demons? And they're like, no. And I'm like, all right, here's what your night is about to consist of. You got to go home. You got to track this film down. You got to watch it. Then go watch that documentary they just put out not too long ago, because that was great. Because that had a lot of in detail stuff too. Leanna wound up getting married out of that movie, didn't she?
She did. She did. And I was very jealous. Steve Johnson was putting plaster all over her breasts one night.
Right.
And the next thing you know, they're engaged. So he could not resist those breasts, even before we found out they can hide lipstick in them. So she didn't even need to take a purse when she goes to a party. She
just stick it right in there and just keep it whenever you need it.
Her wallet and her car keys in there too. I don't know.
I had to get Nick to spill the beans. I was like, all right, as a kid that was probably too young to be watching that at the time, how the hell did you do that? Because it looked very real. It was. Yep. That's what he told me. He's like, you know, just a little tiny slit in there. And I was just like, well, man, she nailed it. You couldn't even tell. And I mean, and at that point, had she already done The Return of the Living Dead?
She did. And that was the reason she got that role.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of us had to audition, and she didn't, because she was a big star in the horror world already. And that was a call. Maybe it was the director who said, I want Linnea Quigley. We want Linnea Quigley. Because you had just seen her dancing naked on the tombstone.
Yep, as trash. And yeah.
She stole the show. She completely stole the show.
Oh, 100%. I remember it was funny. I showed my son all these movies, like all these classics, like The Return of the Living Dead and Night of the Demons. And I remember we were watching Return of the Living Dead, and it got to that scene where she was dancing on the tombstone, and my wife happened to come walking around the corner. She's like, what the hell you got him watching? And I'm like, you actually can't see anything. I was like, if you really notice, you can't see nothing. They had to get like a special prosthetic to put over her area the way you could, because he's like, we can't show that on film. Like, we're going to get in trouble. So they made like a prosthetic. It was flesh colored, obviously, you know, but I was just like, so he's not really, technically, he's not really seeing anything, you know. Yeah, she kind of cut her eyes at me, but I think it's important, because like, I grew up on these movies, and you know, if we don't introduce these movies to the younger generation, I don't ever want them to forget. And what they have to hold on to now just isn't as good. I mean, it's just not. I would rather watch A Night of the Demons any day of the week than to go watch anything out in the theaters right now. That's just the sad truth of where we're at with horror.
Well, thank you for that vote of confidence. There are some more low budget ones that are blasting into the mainstream.
Terrifier is a good one. How about what they're doing?
I wasn't going to name it by name. They're all friends of mine. And I'm so proud of them. Last time I saw the director and David, I think I was on the verge of bursting into tears, because I said, listen, you guys, You just changed the whole game.
Oh, yeah.
You raised the bar. You changed the whole game. Not just for low-budget horror, for all low-budget filmmakers out there.
Yeah.
Because they crowdfunded that first one.
Yep.
And then they go out with no money. They made it for like thousands of dollars, not hundreds of thousands, not millions, thousands of dollars. And that clown is terrifying. He's terrifying before you see anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also the same sensibility that I had as a ballerina.
Mm-hmm.
He's a mime, and he's a brilliant mime. So when he's coming in and everything's so cute and you're going, oh no, what's going to happen next? Oh shit. And that's what I've heard people say about me. I asked another fan who's now a dear friend. I said, what is it? You know, I don't even know how it came up. He said, you know what the scariest thing in the movie is? I said, what? He said, you're dancing. You're in front of the fireplace and you look up. And you just smile, this wicked, wicked smile. And I said, but you haven't seen anything yet. He said, that's why it's scary.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what's going to happen next. We know it's going to be bad.
Yeah.
And that's what Art the Clown is doing.
Yeah.
And those guys, I'm so proud of them. I could explode.
Yeah. They're killing it. And you can tell, you watch that movie, and it has that similar feel to A Night of the Demons. They're very much a throwback to the 80s. And I think that's the shot that horror needed in the arm, for sure. Yeah. And I'm so glad that, you know, the audiences flocked to it and gave it the love and, you know, the attention it deserved. And now I think there is a third one being made, or it's being shot, or soon to be shot.
Yeah.
That's good. That's what horror really needed. Like I said, those are few and far between nowadays. And I would rather see something like Terrifier than, you know, my son wanted to go see one of the more recent movies that just come out, The Boogeyman. And we went and seen that. And that just, it didn't do it for me. I would rather watch The Terrifier any day of the week, or go back and watch, you know, hardly anything or almost anything made from the 80s and 90s. It's really hard. And Terrifier is changing the game, like you said, not only for the actors that were involved, because now they're saying, okay, well, if people can do this off this budget, that's going to create more people to step up and try to do it, to know that you don't need multi-million dollar budgets to get something like this off.
I totally agree. And now Damien is going to make a number three.
Mm-hmm.
And he has got more money being thrown at him. He's getting wooed.
Yeah. Oh, I bet.
But it's so heartening to know that it may all flip back the other way again, because they've taken the low budget things. If I'm watching something and the eyes start glowing red, it's not scary. It's CGI. Mm-hmm. It's not scary. And they use practical effects. He did those things himself. Damien did it himself. And I've got pictures on my phone that they've all sent me of what this body looks like when a shark took a big bite out of it. And it is that. It's very much that same flavor and inspiration that we had back then. And there, I'm a big snob about CGI. There are certainly some cases where CGI really works, mm-hmm. like Titanic.
Right.
It worked. That boat going down, that was scary.
Right.
That was scary. And sometimes you'll have something where they're filming in outer space and they need it. But when it's overused, it flattens out and becomes monotonous.
Yeah.
And then you're having just one explosion after another, after another, after another. I'm like, no, when's the story going to start? In Night of the Demons, it was a story. It's a storytelling. It's almost like one of those little ghost stories. You sit around the fire and freak each other out. I mean, you're from the South. I'm from the South.
Oh, yeah.
How many people sat in the back of a pickup truck and, you know, tried to scare the hell out of each other when they were kids?
Yeah.
But
all the time.
We did. And so it worked too.
Yeah, 100%. And that's just something that I think movies like we've discussed is just missing from today's time. And even the comedic parts of Night of the Demons, like when Sal fell off that building and it flashes back to him and He's got a tombstone already over his head that says Sal died tonight. Like, that shit cracked me up seeing that.
And Billy's funny. Billy's funny in person. And so is Hal Havens. And so is Phil Tanzini. They're funny. And that, it really came across.
Mm-hmm. No, it did. Now, we talked a little bit about one and two. Part three, that was in, what, 97, right? I mean, were you excited to get the call to come back to do part three? I mean, what was your feelings on it at that point?
Well, they were flying me to Montreal, and I'd never been. And we were shooting in the woods in autumn, in October, outside of Montreal, and it was spectacularly beautiful. I was the only one they were bringing back, which was exciting. And now, in retrospect, what I wish would have happened, and perhaps Brian Trenchard-Smith also wishes this would have happened, would have been to continue the series and the legacy with Brian directing. And I think what happened is that the rights holders wanted to save some money.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than hiring Brian and putting the money into it, because perhaps they didn't understand at the time what they had.
Yeah.
They didn't understand the potential longevity of something like this. And now we can look back at the series of Friday the 13th or Halloween, or these things that went on and on and on and on. And it could have gone on if Brian Trenchard-Smith had been at the helm. I liked the director, but it was done in a low budget way where it was going straight to video. It didn't even get a theatrical release. And it's about to come out on Blu-ray, so maybe it will get a second chance. I don't know.
Well, Jeffrey Kaufman, right? Did it? Jeffrey Kaufman?
Yeah, and yeah. I love him. And I think that the actors did a great job. It just didn't have that. It didn't have the depth. It wasn't as solid. It wasn't as complicated. It wasn't as sophisticated. It wasn't as funny.
Right.
It wasn't as scary as the first two. The special effects certainly could not compare to the first two.
Right. And but, I think the first two had the roots of you.
I did give a blowjob to a loaded gun. And how often are you going to see that? I did actually suck the bullets out of a loaded gun. Now, if that doesn't make anybody want to watch it, I don't know what will.
I was going to bring that up. That's the one of the memorable parts of that movie for sure. Because like I think in that movie, they shoot cops or they kill cops or some accident. So they hide out in there and you're in the house, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. The first two at least kind of kept with the story, because in two, you kind of had what Mouse was she kin to you or something?
Was my little sister.
Yeah. Okay. So it kind of kept with that kinship storyline, which I think is important. That one is just like these kids just happened to stumble into the wrong damn house.
Right. And it was not the same house, obviously.
Right.
Actually, part two was not the same house.
We were still tell.
Hollywood. We were in Pasadena. It wasn't Hull House.
Mm-hmm.
And number three certainly wasn't Hull House. Mm-hmm. And the Hull House in part one and two, as you said before, it's almost as if the house is a character.
100%.
The house is alive. The house is as scary as the characters because it's going to lock you in. Mm-hmm. There is no way to get out of that house. It's a living, breathing entity.
And what's Roger in that first one, he still trips me out. He's going along that road. Where the fuck is the damn gate? I mean, he's looking for that gate. He's like, we coming through a gate, didn't we? I mean, it's just everything about that, just the way it was written. I don't know how much you guys ad-libbed. I mean, it worked. They couldn't have written a perfect script. And I wish they would have come up with a fresh way to do part four instead of doing the remake. I was not a big fan of the remake. And I'm not just saying that because we're on the Zoom call, but there's some people that I believe in the horror genre that you just can't replace all willy nilly. Jason, even to an extent, it was hard with him because Kane Hodder gave so much life to a character that basically doesn't speak, but he gave it the movements and the head movements. So he really kind of honed in. But like, if you're under a certain kind of mask, like Leatherface, maybe you could get away with it. But when you know the person, much like Robert Englund, as good as Jackie Earle Haley is, he was going into a no-win situation doing that Nightmare on Elm Street reboot. I don't think Shannon and Elizabeth stood a chance of going in there and becoming a new Angela. It just wasn't going to happen.
Well, thank you. She's a massive animal advocate in South Africa, and I lead safaris in Africa, and I have a charity in Africa. I'll go back this year for the first time since COVID. I went 19 years in a row, every single year.
Wow.
Whatever that remake was, it was not a remake of Night of the Demons.
Right.
It was not. And that was the call, again, of the rights holders. Rather than bringing the entire cast back in a reunion, as they should have,
mm-hmm.
they wanted to make a quick buck. I mean, that's God's honest truth.
Yeah.
And I don't think that they knew the kind of fan base or cared what the fans want. I care about what the fans want.
Exactly.
If it weren't for the fans, we wouldn't be at these conventions. This wouldn't still be going on. We wouldn't be able to keep these movies alive. It's the fans that are keeping the movies alive. Mm-hmm. And I felt like there were a lot of interesting elements in the remake. I love the where he started it, that they started it in old Louisiana. And I know what they based it on. It's those antebellum homes in the old South.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one, and I've been to it. It's called the Myrtles. And this is a true story. They tell you when you go on that that Natchez Trace ghost tour of all of the haunted antebellum homes. These were cotton plantations in the Deep South before the slaves were free.
Mm-hmm.
And the master of the house had an affair with a nanny who was a slave. And she accidentally killed both of his kids. This is a true story, because she wanted to prove that if they got sick, that she could cure them. And in this antebellum home, there's a huge mirror. I mean, it weighs a ton. It's huge, with a huge, heavy frame. And they say in the morning, that mirror will be in the middle of the room. So it's a powerful ghost. So I thought it was a cool opening. You know, as a writer, I could see that and say, all right, I get where he's going with that.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like Furlong did a great performance, because he always does. But it wasn't, they should have just called it something else and said, we're making a fresh horror movie from scratch. This has nothing to do with Night of the Demons. And maybe they could have gotten away with it. Maybe it would have been successful. But they tried to do something that they shouldn't have done.
Mm-hmm.
They just shouldn't have done. And at these conventions, I see how hard these actors have it. Paul Taylor's a friend of mine. And you don't want to take over the Pinhead series and then have fans come up to you and say, well, I like this one better.
Right.
You weren't the best one. Why did he not do it? You did it. And so he suffers a lot of hatred from the fans, even though he did a great job.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is you can do your job as an actor, but fans, especially horror fans, are really picky it's almost like they see that first, they become, it's a kinship that they have to have them in that role. Nobody else can play that role, especially after a few films, two or three films. They're used to seeing that face. They're associating it with that character, and somebody else stepping into those roles, horror fans don't take kindly to that at all.
They really don't. They don't. And it's amazing to think that they still love us, but they do.
Yeah.
They do. I mean, I know what that's like, because I'd rather see Tim Curry than any other actor pretending to be Tim Curry.
Right. Exactly.
Leave that alone. I mean, there are some things you don't remake. Don't remake the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Mm-hmm.
Don't even try to. And somebody will eventually. And same thing right now with my aunt. Don't try to remake the Golden Girls.
Yeah.
Forget about that. And maybe in another 20 years, when the next generation comes, and then they can maybe do it.
Right.
But you don't touch that. You can't touch that.
Yeah, there's some things that no matter how great they were, and Golden Girls being one of them, it was a great show, landmark show. Sometimes it's better left, you know, as a finished product.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Well, before we get out of here, because we're closing in on the hour mark, tell us a little bit about the charities that you have going on, because I know you're a really big animal lover, avid animal lover, and I think that's important for people to know. So tell us a little bit about the charities where if any of our listeners feel the need to go donate, they can do so.
That's so kind of you. I really appreciate that. Well, I work with wild animals all over the world, and I have this... I have the incredible luxury of having a God-given gift to be able to understand what they're thinking and feeling and needing and how to negotiate behavior problems and health problems, relationship problems. And in America, it's mainly with dogs, cats, birds, small animals, show horses all over the world. In England, it was with who is now the king. The king's horses. Mm-hmm. I worked with Queen Elizabeth's horses and then with the top Olympic show horses, and we've won the gold and the silver in Rome and Vienna. So I work with show jumping horses, but I have an incredible passion for wild animals, and a lot of it, elephants, big cats, lions, tigers, leopards, lynx, cheetah, jaguar. And in Rwanda with gorilla. So, and in South Africa with everything from penguins to great white sharks, I keynoted these charities until I finally have a charity of my own. I have a nonprofit of my own called Archangel. And while I'm calling it a God-given gift, the truth of the matter is everyone can do it. Everyone has intuition. Everyone has the ability to get quiet, get your fear out of the way, and start paying attention to your gut instincts. Mm-hmm. What do you really think is going to happen? How do you really feel about this? I mean, even if you've got, let's say, a situation right now that I'm being presented with, does this cat want to have this leg amputated because his cat has cancer? Or does this cat want to pass over and go to heaven? And those calls are really hard to make. And when you start this intuition training and you discover, not only can I do it, you can do it. Everyone can do it. It's based on an open heart and an open mind. That if you love them enough and you trust yourself enough, they can't speak English. So how are they going to get messages across to you? You've got to develop a different way of receiving information. Mm-hmm. And we all have it. You know, when you're on the let's say, for instance, you're on a highway and a car in front of you is about to cut you off. You know it.
Yeah.
You'll look and you'll say, he's about to cut me off. He's not going to signal. He's going to cut me off. And they do it. Or else you get a hunch. I better not go that way to work today. Something's wrong. Something's wrong. And if you override your intuition and say, no, it's stupid fear, I'm going to make myself do it, you're going to go there and you're going to get stuck in a pile up behind a jackknife truck. Mm-hmm. And now with global warming, even more so. Should I get on this airplane? Is it safe to send my kid to school today? You know, for heaven's sake. Mm-hmm. Should I get on this train? Should I try to do this? And we have that little quiet voice inside of us that's guiding us, that's connected to something greater, all that God is. Call it whatever you want, that eternal, infinite wisdom, that we're a part of something. We're small parts of something very big. And when we're more aware of it, then you can start developing this supernatural ability more and more and more and more. Now I have students all over the world that blow my mind. And every webinar I teach, they're getting names. They're going to say, oh, your other dog passed away and he was a little white Scotty. His name was Oliver. And he's with your grandmother now. And her name is Flora. And she was from Italy. I mean, everybody can do it. We've just been taught that we can't. Mm-hmm. And it's really disempowering. We've been taught that we're less than what we really are so that other people can control us. When we own this kind of ability to have a direct through line to God, You can't be controlled. So when I get down to Africa, the elephants are going to be waiting for me before the truck even pulls out. The elephants are going to be waiting around my tent before I know what tent I'm going to be in. They're going to wait before my plane lands. I'll have five elephants that are waiting for me. And the lions bring their babies to me. The leopards bring their cubs. And so it's everything. It's crocodiles and cuckoo and kudu and crown cranes and warthogs and baboons. And it's the Garden of Eden on Earth.
Wow.
And what I do there is I go into the schools with the kids. This is how I use my dance training and my acting training. And I'll have the children dance as lions, draw lions, make up theater about plays about who's going to be the big bad poacher, who's going to murder the elephant. And I have them all acted out. So in the beginning, I said, all right, how many of you feel like an elephant would miss his mother if his mother got killed? Not one hand went up. I had 60 kids in that room. I had them acted out that the poacher shoots the mom, shoots the aunt, because they're always in family groups. Then it kills all the other elephants except this one little girl who's pretending to be the baby elephant. She's going up to these dead bodies all over the floor. And the children start to cry. I said, now, how many of you think an elephant would miss his mother if his mother got poached? Every single hand went up. So to teach these kids, you can get jobs on the safari parks, protecting the animals. You don't have to give in to the poachers. You can be guides. You can be cooks. You can drive the trucks. You can do everything and not allow your lions and your all the animals, the elephants too, to get poached. Then it's not an easy thing because that it's the equivalent of $500,000 in their pockets. Mm-hmm. And I know the other side of the story. They've got families to feed. They've got children. They've got grandmothers in the hospital dying. They've got a community to take care of. And if they're starving, they're going to say, but we have a stockpile of ivory and we're not allowed to sell it because it's now illegal to sell it. Mm-hmm. This happened in Zimbabwe. And he said, is this fair? Our people are starving to death and we can't sell the ivory we already have. So everything that I'm in, it's not black and white. It's not like Americans are going to go in and bully other people and tell them what to do and fix their problems for them. It's not that. It's learning, what can I do for these people? How can I help these animals and help these children and also help the community? And that's what the end goal is, that everybody benefits from it. And I certainly do, because I love every second of this. I live for these moments.
I can tell you're very passionate about it.
Oh, thank you.
And you have a donate button on your website where they can donate to your charity?
Sweetheart, I sure do. And it's called Amelia's Archangel Society. And I also have the online training where people can see the kind of webinars I'm teaching. And I also have a store page where there are very inexpensive things. So things that you could order a lesson or a meditation for $9 or $18, and you've got those downloads. There's also a revolving thing, and it's under $400. You get 52 lessons to listen to at your leisure. They're about 45 minutes to an hour long. So I'm trying to get more products out there to help people. Because I get bombarded all day, every day with my cat's missing, my dog's dying, my horse has cancer. I don't know what to do. And even if I don't personally take on all those clients, I can send them now. I can say, all right, what language is this? I had a student in France for you. What language is Italian? I got a student in Italy. So I've got I'm training up the best psychics in the world.
Right.
Honestly, they're the best psychics in the world. And if I can't help everybody, I want to make sure that they get the help. And then these people are teaching everyone at home how to do it for themselves so that we can all help ourselves.
All right. What we're going to do, we're going to link your website to the show notes of this episode. That way people can go check that out, check out your website, see everything you got going on. And if they feel the need to donate, they can just click it right there and donate on your website. So hopefully that'll help you out in that cause. I'm a big animal lover myself, and I know 100% what you're saying. You have that instinct. Sure. You know, I have a husky, and he has his way of letting me know when he's ready to go outside or ready to do anything. Yep. He just, you know, yeah, he can't talk, but he'll stand at the door. He'll go to the door. He'll turn around and he'll look at me and he'll go, and kind of like motion his head towards the door. That's basically saying, hey, get up and let my ass go outside. I mean, that's basically what he's saying.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not crazy to know that your dogs and your horses and your cats have feelings. It's crazy to think that they don't.
Yeah. 100%. 100%.
I mean, everybody knows that they do.
Yeah.
This isn't the Middle Ages anymore. We're past that point. And now it's up to us to step up so that we understand what they want. We understand how to take better care of them. And a lot of the time, they may have an emotional problem and it looks just the same as a physical problem. Yeah. And your dog stops eating and you're thinking, all right, what's wrong with it? Well, that could be a tooth problem. It could be stomach cancer. Maybe his best friend outside got hit by a car and you don't even know about it. Mm-hmm. Or the next door neighbor had a dog and they just moved away and you don't even know about it. And if you can't fine tune your senses enough to know, is this emotion? Is this sadness? Is this physical? Is it pain? And we have the ability to do that. We've just been taught a lot of unnecessary nonsense in school.
Yeah.
And we weren't taught the things that we're going to need the most, which is, what's going on with my dog?
I agree 100%. Yeah, my dog, there was a neighbor, they had a pit bull, and my dog, they loved each other. It was a girl, my dog's a male, and they moved actually to Orlando. And you can tell that for a while after they left, like he was just real sad. He would just walk around. He wouldn't really want to go outside anymore. He'd just kind of lay around and moped around like it was like a breakup. You know, he was sad for about a month.
They can die of a broken heart.
Yeah.
They can. And nobody's more emotional than horses.
Yeah.
Horses will mourn. They will literally die of a broken heart. They'll colic and almost die. And it'll be emotional. And we have to start paying more attention to this and give them more credit that they're 10 million times more intelligent than we think that they are. Humans like to think that they're better than everybody else, and we're not.
I agree 100%. Well, Amelia, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you coming on the show. It's meant the world to me, seriously.
Thank you so much. And I'm sorry I'm so blurry. I'm sorry, everybody who's watching me. I didn't mean to overdo my blur.
No, it cleared up. It's fine. Well, I'm going to tell us real quick some of the dates that you got planned up over the next few weeks as far as the cons go. I'm going to try to get this out as soon as I can.
That would be great. So, not this weekend, the following weekend. So that's the first weekend after the 4th. Mm-hmm. That's Albuquerque.
Okay.
The third week weekend in August, I think it's about the 27th. That weekend is Terror Trader, and that one is up in Mesa, Arizona.
Okay.
Talk about hot. It's going to be hot. It's going to be like Whole House. I could set my fingers on fire just trying to open my car door. Then in September, it's the first weekend of September, right after that. So it's the second and third. We've got Colt Classic in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I've never done anything down there, and I went to high school down there. So it's going to be amazing to see if people turn out in Louisiana or if they come from Alabama, Arkansas, if they drive in from other places. Mm-hmm. And then the final one before I leave the country to go to Africa is going to be Orlando, Florida.
Well, I think that's where you're going to see me there. Breeze has got flights from Charleston straight to Orlando. So I think I'm going to come down there and check you guys out.
Oh, that would be so wonderful. And yeah, please bring your wife and bring your son, and I'll do my very best to scare the hell out of both of them.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. I would expect nothing less. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I am Hollywood Wade. That was the horror icon herself, Amelia Kincaid. Again, 1,000 thank yous for coming on Crime and Entertainment. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you. You're awesome,
thank
Wade.
You.
You're great.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that will conclude this episode of Crime and Entertainment. Please tune in next week for an all-new episode of Crime and Entertainment. Amelia, we appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Boy, oh boy, what an episode that was. We hope everybody enjoyed it. Please, if you have not seen Night of the Demons, for goodness sakes, go give that a look-see, and then I know you'll be grateful. You can come back and say, Hollywood, you told me to go do it. I loved it. Appreciate it. Take my advice, folks. I'm not going to steer you wrong when it comes to movies, especially horror movies, by God. Now, what you can do for me, for giving you this advice and pumping out all these great episodes, you can head on over to the social medias, Crime and Entertainment on Facebook. That's the and symbol, Crime and Symbol and Entertainment. On the Instagrams, Crime the letter N and Entertainment. And on the TikToks, Crime A-N-D and Entertainment. You can like, subscribe, follow us on all of those platforms. Over on the YouTube side, please like, subscribe, hit that notification bell. That way you get notified every time we drop a video for you guys to go check out. A lot of work goes into those videos. And of course, on the audio side, we're everywhere you get podcasts, folks. We're on Spotify, Apple, Google, Stitcher. I think it's around for a few more weeks before it shuts its doors. You know, anywhere you get your podcasts, you're going to find us there. Amazon Music, Google, all those good places. If you would, leave us a nice review. Rate us 5 stars, whatever you can do to help drive us up the charts. Doesn't cost anything. It's not money out of your pocket, but it really helps out the show, really drives us up the charts, puts us in the algorithm, if you will, that gets us in front of a few more eyeballs and ears, if you will. So that would really help us out. We certainly appreciate everybody listening to all these episodes. I hope you enjoyed this one. It was one of my personal favorites. I loved this movie coming up as a kid. Absolutely love it. Still holds up today. One of my personal favorites, as I said, and I was just beyond excited to have Amelia on the show. Hopefully I get to meet in person real soon, so hopefully we can get that worked out. Well, that would do it for today's episode, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Hollywood Wade. That was Amelia Kincaid from Night of the Demons as Angela, and unfortunately, we are out of time. Tune in next week for an all-new episode of Crime and Entertainment.